That's funny. I realized I have no idea where I am.
You're here?
I'm here, Mary.
St. Paul.
I said to somebody last night, meaning what's the name of this auditorium, I said to one of the organizers, I said, where am I? And they said, Minneapolis, Minnesota. I was like, okay. But Lori's and this and that.
But you're in St. Paul now.
No, now I know. I'm in St. Paul.
And that is different than Minneapolis.
And I came through Cleveland
to get here.
Was it?
It took you 15, 20 minutes to get here.
That took me 15 to 20 minutes to get here. So I asked, is the marathon going to affect my commute tomorrow morning? And I said, no, it's going to take 15 to 20 minutes. I want to know if the marathon means the difference between 15 and 20. Or does it mean something longer?
Tomorrow it's 26 minutes.
Tomorrow's 26 minutes, okay. That's the outer limit.
26.2.
I had said that when I asked somebody, the person who very kindly picked me up at the airport, I said, how long does it take to get to the hotel where I'm staying? And he said, 15 to 20 minutes. And I said, you know, that's the only time that I can remember where people didn't begin their response with, depends on traffic. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. And every place I've gone since then has been the same answer. So, a very interesting place. So some of you are still eating your bagels, so I'm going to speak for a little bit. You can see that morning break probably needs to be a little longer because it's breakfast for some of you. And then we're going to do some walking meditation and some sitting meditation before lunch in loving kindness. I should also say walking meditation is symbolic. If you have difficulty walking or you choose not to do walking, the idea is bringing one of the techniques, either mindfulness or loving kindness, out into some kind of more ordinary activity. So eyes open, more connected to the world around you. You can do it walking, you can do it drinking a cup of tea, sitting in the carter, looking around, sitting outside, whatever it is. So even though I'll describe it in terms of walking meditation, that's really its purpose, is to be a bridge. When I sit myself, which is every day, mostly these days, there was a long period, there was about a 4-year period when all of my formal practice was loving kindness. That was all that I did pretty well. And these days, when I sit each day, it's really very much about mindfulness, it's about awareness. Occasionally I'll do some form of loving kindness, and I always think I want to go back to it, so someday I will. But I also have a resolve to do loving kindness meditation whenever I'm waiting. And I count every mode of transportation as a form of waiting, so I'm kind of waiting to get to the other place. So when I'm walking down the streets of New York, when I am on an airplane, when I'm on a bus, when I'm in a taxi, and certainly in a waiting room, or all those times when say I'm sitting in a waiting room and I might just pick up a magazine I actually don't want to read, just to spend the time, not to be doing nothing. So instead, I'll do loving kindness meditation. So it's a really fun and interesting way of being engaged in these interim periods, these places in between. Okay, so as we focus on technique, the technique becomes like the foundation, and there are lots of ways of shifting and changing and being creative so that the practice really becomes your own. So loving kindness as a quality, or metta as a quality, meaning friendship, the art of friendship, is classically talked about along with three other qualities, in the Buddhist psychology, and of course these are very secular techniques. They don't have to be tied to that particular languaging. It's just like for somebody like me, I went to India so long ago, and that was the context within which I learned them, that it's a languaging that I'm very accustomed to, and it's an easy way for me to express these things, but I think they're really universal truths. So within the Buddhist psychology, there are four qualities that are talked about together. The first being loving kindness, that deep sense of recognition that our lives are connected, they have something to do with one another. That flexibility of perspective, being able to look at the good within us, perhaps the good within others, or remembering that all beings want to be happy. The second of these qualities is compassion, which is the trembling or the quivering of the heart in response to seeing pain or suffering. It's an actual movement of our hearts, and we move toward that situation to see if we can be of help. And we're going to talk a lot more about compassion as the time goes on. The third quality is sympathetic joy, which is being happy for the happiness of others. Instead of witnessing someone's success or good fortune and falling sway to the voice which so often arises within us, like, ew, I would be happier if you had a little bit less going for you right now. You know, you don't have to lose everything, but if the light could just dim a bit, I would feel better, which is the common reaction, right? But we don't have to fall into that. Instead, it's actually being happy for someone else's happiness. Instead of feeling something's been taken away from us somehow. So that's the third quality. The fourth quality is equanimity. And in this context, equanimity means balance. It's the balance born of wisdom, as I talked a little bit about this last night. It's like perspective. In many ways, we say equanimity or wisdom is the underpinning of the other three. Because these are delicate states. They're not so easy to understand. They have a measure of wisdom that helps them be what they are. So the first three, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, one way of saying it is that they're all practices of generosity. They're like generosity of the spirit. They may not be material generosity, though of course they might be, but they're like generosity of the spirit. Like when you're in that elevator, this is another very New York example. You're in that elevator and a stranger strikes up a conversation with you. And your first sort of visceral response from childhood is, what do you want? When you actually stop and remember, it's not going to cost me anything to talk to them. Maybe they have no one else to talk to. Like, you can arrive, you can get there. That's an act of generosity. I told that story last time I taught in Madison, which I do every year. And then I, you know, we did walking or something like that. There was a break. And then I got back in and I got into the elevator to go up to the room we were using. And two participants got into the elevator and they started talking to me. And then they said, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I know you don't like it when people talk to you in the elevator. I said, no, no, just an example. But, you know, but that's the kind of thing. There's so many moments we can smile at somebody, we can thank them. It's not material generosity, but we can really make a point of being present with somebody. That's why these practices are considered practices of generosity. And we know there are lots of different ways we can give a gift. And this brings us to the topic of motivation. So, again, in the Buddhist psychology, as many of you know, the motive or the intention behind an act, behind what we do or what we say, is considered a very powerful part of the action. And this is a little different than kind of a common Western understanding, which is more like, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, or what do you mean you meant well, you know, you did such a stupid thing. But here, the idea of the motive and knowing one's motive and realizing we can change our common motives, we can be coming from a different place, we can be inspired, we can be flexible. That is a very, very important understanding. So, for example, if I were to reach down, pick this up, and move it forward, all anybody sees is my hand moving down, picking up an object, and bringing it forward to give it to one of you. But another question, another level, is why? What's in my heart that is generating that motion? Because it really could be anything, right? Maybe I'm giving this to you because I like you and I want you to have it. And maybe I'm giving it to you because I see you have that fabulous water bottle. And I think, well, hey, I'll give you this vase and flowers and you'll give me that incredible water bottle. Or maybe I'm giving it to you because I don't like you. And I think, you're probably allergic, aren't you? Same exact smile and look. And the same gesture, the same movement of my arm, but it's coming from a very different place within. So within that framework, it's considered a very different action. It's taught both classically, and I believe the research is also pointing to this, that the field of the psyche, of the mind, that is transformed through practices like loving kindness meditation or compassion meditation, is the field of motivation. It's not going to decide what we're going to do, it's going to help mold why we do things. So there's another level to action, which we'll talk about more later, which has to do with mindfulness of context, of discerning wisdom, paying attention, read the sign, for God's sake. You know, notice where you are. To the best of your ability, act skillfully in that context, in that time. So those are considered two different aspects of an action. One is the motivation propelling the action. The other is our best guess of what's most skillful, most appropriate in that moment, in that context. So maybe I stop and think, well, you know, I want to give one of you this vase of flowers, but I've only got one. There are a lot of people in this room. Maybe this is something best done privately. Maybe I should try doing it in this way. Maybe I should try saying it in this way. We learn a lot of skills of communication, of being, of action, of manifestation. And that's its own terrain right there. And the reason I tend to emphasize the distinction between the motivation and the skillfulness of the action is because this tends to be one of those points where people feel very squeamish about loving kindness meditation. Like, I don't know if I really want to have a more loving heart, because then I could only say yes, be sweet, be meek, give away all my money, let them move in, give them my car, whatever it might be, right? That the loving kindness is going to somehow make our world very small and our range of responses very constrained. But they're actually two different things. One is where we're coming from, and the other is our sense of what's most appropriate in that context, in that moment. So maybe we're coming from a genuinely loving place, compassionate place, and our best guess of the most skillful way to respond in a moment, in time, is really fierce. It's saying no. It's not giving them any more money. It's not letting them move into our apartment. It's really strong. Strong boundary. That doesn't mean we're coming from a hateful place. Right? And so I think it's just important, and we'll continue to explore this and beyond, to work with that understanding that we can be coming from a loving and compassionate place, and our best sense of how to respond is going to be based on discernment, wisdom, past experience, feedback, mistakes we've made, all kinds of things. But within our hearts, there can be the generation. So back to generosity. We know there's so many ways to give a gift, right? We can give a gift and it's a freely given gift. We can give a gift and it's more like, thank me, would you? I've been waiting here for an hour for you to thank me properly. Or tell me it's the best book you've ever read in your lifetime. Or give me that in return. And there's so many ways we can give a gift. And so when we talk about loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy being practices of generosity, it's got that underpinning of equanimity, of balance, that helps it be a freely given gift more and more. Otherwise, loving kindness, as one example, becomes more like, it's what one of my friends once called metta with an edge. It becomes more like attachment. So when we use the word attachment, it's not in the Western psychological sense of bonding and so on. It really means kind of an effort to be in control. So it becomes more like, metta with an edge is more like, may you be happy by Tuesday. I've got a really long list of people and I need you to, you know, quickly do all these things so that you're happy.
Right.
And if you're not happy, I'm really disappointed. Right? That's different than may you be happy as a freely given gift. And I'm not saying it's different and that we never go there. I mean, of course we fall into that place sometimes quite a lot. But we can understand the difference. And the more we develop wisdom and balance, the more we develop that felt sense of loving kindness as distinct from all that expectation, the more maybe we fall into the expectation, but we come back, and we just come back. And the more we begin to reside in this place of loving kindness. So if we have been largely motivated by qualities like fear, or sense of alienation in our lives, and we do loving kindness, we will find that we are more and more motivated by a sense of connection. Like my friend with her dry cleaner. So I saw her, this must be 15 years later, you know, that retreat she was talking about not too long ago, and she said, of course, I said, how's your dry cleaner? And she said, you know, it's like the next generation's now working in the store, and it's like fancy dry cleaner opened up down the block, but, you know, these are my people, so I'm staying with my dry cleaning operation. You know, it was really interesting. I don't even know if she ever learned his name, right? But she was looking at him in a different way. So our motivational field, the worldview we have, who counts, who doesn't count, the way we are in a moment, that's what shifts. And then we develop skills of expression, of manifestation, which is its own process. So if you perhaps have any of that squeamishness, like, you know, my first book, as Edmund said, it was called Loving Kindness. It came out in 1995. And I have a friend who maybe he's in his 40s, And he told me he was reading it on the New York City subway, and he was so embarrassed to be seen reading a book called Loving Kindness that he was, like, cleverly placing his fingers over the title. And I was holding a copy the other day, and I thought, those are big letters. You know, you have to really, like, do that. And I thought, God, it's like pornography or something. You know, it's like, but we can be awfully squeamish about that quality as though it makes us weak. As though it's going to make us give in. As though, you know, there's a lot of confusion, and it's understandable in terms of our conditioning. So that's also something that we're going to really be looking at in our time here together. Okay, wisdom is the underpinning, and its manifestation as balance, that's equanimity. And on that foundation, we start paying attention in a different way to ourselves and to others. That's the actual practice of loving kindness. So, in sitting and doing loving kindness, which is not the first thing we're going to do, instead of the skill set is very similar to what we did with the breath, but instead of the breath, the centering point, or what we call the primary object, is the repetition, silent repetition of certain phrases. The phrases are the conduit for our attention. That's how we're moving our attention. That's how we're stretching. So the phrases in sitting, usually three or four in number, like beginning with ourselves, may I be safe, be happy, be healthy, live with ease. And I'll describe that when we come back and sit. In walking meditation or in doing this meditation through a more active way, you know, being outside, drinking a cup of tea, whatever, because it's more complicated, you know, the more sense impressions coming at us, usually we just use two or three phrases. And there are many styles and many possibilities of ways of doing this, so I'm going to tell you my favorite, and then we're going to go out and do it and come back in and do a sitting. And I would also say, I'd really appreciate it in this period if you really used it as a time of practice and tried to be silent. I mean, unless somebody asks you a question, like, where's the office or something. And then, as we always say at IMS, act normal. You know? Like, please respond. So then, but just use it as a time, you know, to the best of your ability to actually be practicing. So, walking meditation. In doing loving kindness while walking, first of all, walk at a normal speed. Some of you are used to doing insight meditation where you really slow down. And you don't have to do loving kindness, and there's not really the facility to slow down because it looks so incredibly strange. So act normal. You know, walk at a normal speed. Get outside if you can, if it's not raining, or if it's okay with you to be outside. Eyes open. And it's the silent repetition of certain phrases, let me emphasize. And usually, this is the way I like to do it, so it's what I'm going to suggest. You're walking along, eyes open, silently resting your attention, silently repeating these phrases like, may I be happy, may I be peaceful. May I be happy, may I be peaceful. That's the gift giving. You're offering yourself this gift of this quality of attention, wishing yourself well. May I be happy, may I be peaceful. Now, it needs to be a very light awareness that you're resting on those phrases, because you need to be aware, obviously, of everything around you and so on. But it's like you have a touchstone that you can just come back to, you can be in touch with those phrases. May I be happy, may I be peaceful. And then if someone strongly comes into your consciousness, someone walks by, you hear a dog, you hear a bird, maybe you're outside, you see a bug, just quickly include them, like, oh, be happy. And then go back to just repeating the phrases for yourself. Okay, does that make sense? Does that seem clear? Can we do it in like 20 minutes, 25 minutes? Okay, and then we'll come back and we'll do a sitting.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.